a vast, snowy wilderness.
You have to understand that homicide, murder, is a completely different kind of criminal act. Very few humans are actually capable of committing the act of murder or attempting to commit the act of murder.
In captions, in the USA, five parents are killed by their children every week.
Everybody was in their own world, in their own thoughts. It was almost beyond comprehension.
Tonight, chilling 911 calls reveal Nathan Brooks' parents had no idea who pulled the trigger.
In 2013, 14-year-old Nathan Brooks shot both his parents in the head while they slept.
I walked into the bedroom. I stood at the foot of their bed. I raised the gun, and before I'd realized that I'd done it, I'd pulled the trigger. I fired again, three times at my mom, and then I swung over to my dad, and that's when it like really clicked what I'd done. I fired at him three times. I just remember thinking, gone, just them being away.
This case is a nightmare on every level.
There's no manual for what's happened to us. You just feel. That's all you do.
It's not just what happened to them, but who did it and what it did to their family.
Nathan today, a young man with blue eyes, light brown hair and stubble. I shot my parents. Moses Lake, Northwest USA. Streetlights and billboards line a road in the city at night, where snow's piled up on the pavements. A police officer with R. Francis stitched on his uniform is driving through the city.
We were just doing our normal deal. It was a normal night, it was quiet. Nothing was going on, and then the radio clicked up and the call came over that shots were fired.
Hun?
911, what's the address of the emergency?
520 South Battery Road. Somebody broke it. We've all been shot. 520 South Battery Road.
What is your name?
John Brooks.
Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
I don't know. I woke up and they've all been shot.
Who's been shot, sir?
My wife and I. Yes, I got blood all over everywhere. I've been shot in the head.
Mac, Moses Lake City Patrol's reporter, shots fired.
With blue lights flashing, Officer Rick Francis responds.
I woke up. I have no idea why I woke up. As I woke up, I saw someone standing by the doorway into our bedroom.
A detached suburban house.
The next thing I remember is being on the floor. Face down on the floor beside my bed. So I can tell something's wrong. I don't really know what happened. The blood was running down over my face and into my eyes, and I couldn't see. I was wiping my face and then flicking it off of my hands or wiping it on the bed. I kept a Glock pistol under the mattress on my side of the bed. All I knew is I had to get it. And then I don't remember anything.
Did you see the person who fired the shots?
Just a figure.
Where's the suspect now?
I don't know. We're hiding in the room.
He says, my daughter's with me. I don't know where my son is.
Nathan poked his head into the room. I told him to come in, and I had him come in and got him behind me. So on my knees with my gun pointing at the entrance to the bedroom. Both my kids are behind me in the corner, and my wife's laying on the bed. She's not really moving. She's just laying there. Kept wiping my face and wiping my face, and I could hear the sirens finally show up out front.
The police are there. I need somebody to go outside without a gun.
When I arrived, when I saw a young man, I said, "Can you come down and unlock the door and let us in?" He unlocked the door, let us in. He was a juvenile, probably 14, 15 years old. I didn't think much more of him at that point.
A security camera films a dog and officers in the kitchen.
Once you get to the top of the stairs, there's a hallway. I could hear somebody yelling, a male voice yelling, we're up here, come help.
Photos of the scene.
You know, when we entered that bedroom, the master bedroom, you could see blood, blood on the floor, blood on the bed, blood covering the pillows. There was so much blood, it was surreal.
Crimson blood stains.
Beth Brooks, the mom, she had been shot underneath her eye, where her eye had collapsed. She'd been shot multiple times. She kept repeating this, almost catatonic, but repeating the same things over and over again. Why did this happen? What did I do wrong? And then the gentleman, Jonathan Brooks, he said, where do you have Nathan?
Under a wintry blue sky, a lorry drives along a road lined with telegraph poles. A tall white water tower with Moses Lake printed on the side. Then a pickup truck driving through the snowy suburbs.
What has happened, what we've dealt with, what we've gone through is complicated beyond words.
A middle-aged woman with blonde, shoulder-length hair takes off her glasses and rubs her eyes.
I was shot in the face here, and I think in through the finger and at the edge of the ear.
I think it was six shots. And then it's either the second or third hit me in the forehead. And then...
It hit here?
Mm-hmm. Bone and bullet fragments in there. Right there.
It damaged my eye, so I only have so much vision out of one eye. And it ruined my hearing. So pretty much... deaf in that ear, and memory. Oh, and I'm still numb.
Beth Brooks touches her forehead. Now she's in her kitchen with John.
My neurologist said I was the first one he'd ever encountered. Nobody has ever come out of that as well as I was. Walking and talking, that was new for him.
Beth looked at him and says, why am I alive? And he actually paused in his tracks, turned around and looked at her and said, none of us know.
Beth filling a daily pill tray from a variety of bottles.
We were both diagnosed with PTSD. I think Beth's condition was greater than mine. Many, 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 many sleepless nights, nightmares, lots of issues to overcome.
The hardest thing with this is depth perception. Because you'll go along and you'll think you're close and you're not. You hit too soon or not soon enough, and it just buggers it, basically burns a hole. So that's interesting. I don't know. 2 years after all this chaos, I just had to have something to do. I couldn't sit and think about that stuff all the time. It kind of makes you crazy.
So we've been here about a year and a half. Part of it is that's the house that everything happened in, so we were actually living in the same house, sleeping in the same bedroom that we were shot in, and it was never the same. There was lots of reasons to change. Some of them very little, very subtle, but this seems more like a home. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
A gun cabinet.
Looks like 14. This is Beth's. This is her, it's her muzzleloader or black powder gun. We use that for hunting. This was it. It's not like the gun did it, but it was that gun.
It was locked. I just don't know that it was locked well or good enough, obviously.
A photo of a baby sleeping.
I have to tell you, when he was born, he was wonderful. Nathan was cuddly. He wanted to be with you. He did better if he was snuggled. And he just, I don't know, I just fell for that little guy.
Nathan being filmed as a teenager.
Okay. Say hi.
Hi.
This is going to be really chic.
There is absolutely nothing like being a grandparent. It's a wonderful chance to really enjoy a childhood.
An ornamental letter N beside a mounted deer head skeleton.
We have his deer head, the deer he got. Beth and John had it mounted. They chose a skeleton mount as opposed to a full face fur mount. Most of the hunters remember their first deer and how they felt. So it was a big day for all the hunters. His mom was 12 years old when she got her first deer. It's hunting, not killing. It's a way of life. It's what we were raised with. Nathan, he's a wonderful, wonderful kid. He really is. I don't know what happened. I don't know why what happened, but it was totally out of character for him.
In the amateur video, Nathan picks up stones, then throws them towards a mound in the distance.
Aww.
In captions, after the shooting, Nathan was taken to the police station. His witness statement was recorded. An overhead CCTV camera films a small interview room. Nathan's shown in by a policeman.
This hospital closer, but better than nothing. Just throw on over what you got on. Just so you know, there's a video camera in here. I just gotta let you know that you can report it. Tell me what went on down at your folks' house tonight.
From beginning to end?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was asleep and I woke up. There was, I don't know, a few gunshots, and I heard screaming, but it was more like yelling. I could hear my dad yelling. And I ran downstairs because I heard him upstairs, so I figured the best place to go would be downstairs. So I ran downstairs and I hid over in the library area of our house. And I sat there and I hid in that little corner. And this guy came down. He's a little taller than me. I was guessing 3, 4, maybe even 5 inches taller than me. He's a pretty big guy. But he loaded it back up because you hear like the tink, 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 but it was like one by one. And it sounded like he ran back up the stairs. He was up there for a little bit, and then he ran back down the stairs, opened up our rear slider door, and ran out the door. And that's the last I saw him.
Prosecuting attorney Angus Lee.
By the time I arrived at the home, Obviously, Nathan was not there. The scene was secure. You walk through the home, and it was any other home in America. His room was any other teenage boy's room in America. What was different about his home was that the security cameras in the home were not on the outside looking out. They were on the inside looking in.
A camera in the corner of the kitchen, then its view of the room.
I've never seen that before, and nobody I know has ever seen that before.
So here's the deal, Nathan, and I'll be pretty blunt with you. I've known you for at least a few years. Mm-hmm. Do you know that your dad moved one of the video cameras inside the house?
No.
He did.
Okay.
You know what the video camera showed?
Hmm.
Why don't you tell me what the video camera showed? What went on tonight? I'm giving you a chance to be honest with me because you haven't been to this point.
Well, when you watch the video, you see Nathan running through the house, or moving through the house in his underwear, carrying a revolver.
Grainy footage of Nathan creeping through the kitchen.
It was the kind of evidence you don't get in every case. It's powerful, and it's undeniable.
In the footage, a hall light is turned off, making the kitchen darker before Nathan passes through it in his underpants. A two-way mirror in the police interview room.
You need to be honest with me, son.
You know what I've done.
Nathan sits, resting his head on his hand.
I don't even know what I was thinking.
Look, man, we make mistakes. Now's the time to talk about it.
Not like this, though.
Kids don't
just pull a gun on their parents.
Tell me what happened, man. Nathan, you're a good kid.
Apparently not. I almost killed my parents. I don't even know if they're dead. They might be.
They're not.
Nathan lifts the V-neck of his hospital gown and briefly covers his face with it.
I was mad. Everything just shut off. I don't even remember really what happened exactly. It just went blank. Next thing I know, I've got a gun and it's empty. And my dad's bleeding. And so is my mom.
Well, let's take it back a step. Where did you get the gun from?
The case. In the fourth bedroom. You can pry the doors open.
What kind of gun is it?
It's a .22 revolver Smith & Wesson. It's my grandpa's.
And what were you trying to do when you pulled the trigger?
What a gun does.
Which is?
Kill.
So your goal when you walked in there was to kill both your parents?
Yes. So stupid.
He covers his eyes and weeps.
Now I have to go to jail. It's attempted murder.
Where did you put the gun afterwards?
I threw it in the pool.
An aerial view of the police station at night. Its near empty car park cleared of snow.
This was his favorite. I gotta hold this one.
Beth smiles at a purple and black baseball cap.
blanket, don't laugh.
She sniffs inside it.
I still do that. Don't make fun of me. It's the first time I probably enjoyed the sweat. You know, you go in their room and their socks are nasty. It always stinks in there. But then when you don't get that every day, then you do find yourself, and I will admit, I like the smell.
Now Beth's sitting with a folder of photos and documents.
These are neat, and they still send us these. Our printouts of his grades, classes he's taking, just like a report card mailed to you. So that's nice. I still get to call him up and say, hey, what are you doing? Pay attention to your schoolwork. So that's very, very nice. Auto mechanics, A-. Let's see, robotics, A-. I believe he starts this month for college courses, but he only gets to take one at a time because we have to pay for it, so. That's a pillowcase I made him. I love that. This is an album I'm gonna start. Basically, I'm just gonna start putting pictures in it for him of just Christmas, graduation, birthdays. I keep, a running record of stuff going on for him. Things for him and things for us. So he'll have those. That's him jumping the four-wheeler. I love that picture. Forget how old he is, but boy, he had fun on it.
As she puts the photo album back in the large box, she smiles tearfully. Then she closes the lid. The word family is printed on it.
But it just gets closed. Never goes away. Nathan never goes away. And I'm grateful for that. Might not be the best place for the next 13 years, but he's around and I get to talk to him.
I'd rather double check than get over there and realize I don't have something. These are visiting slips that we have to fill out every time we go to visit. It's basic information, you know, who you are, your relationship, where you live, those kind of things.
They leave their house.
I think I view it, and from my mind, like he's at school, at college or university, and I just view it that way. Knowing, obviously, that's not true, but you go with that because it works for me. And we're hitting the espresso stand. Yay. Just saying. At the very beginning of everything, there were so many questions. Basically, you know, what the heck was he thinking? You know, what's going on? I don't understand. That's his nervous goodbye. It would have been very easy to get extremely angry, to go to dark places with this. But I think that total disbelief and shock protected us. I think it was good for us.
Starting to snow. Are you ready for this?
Yes. Well, no, but we'll go.
The snowy landscape with a yellow-white sun on the horizon, then telegraph poles lining a road. In shaky camera footage, Nathan does a flip on a trampoline.
Give me that one yet. Oh, the whiplash is real. This is the worst time to record.
So what do you have to say for yourself?
Nathan's friend Caden in a diner.
I think about him probably 10 times a day. I wish that he was here because, you know, my best friend.
In shaky camera footage, Nathan jumps up, then dangles from a basketball hoop.
Pretty much like your brother getting taken away, your best friend, everything that you loved is pretty much gone. And it's hard.
Gotta do a one-hit wonder.
I really like his personality. He's super, super funny guy. Jeez, we would crack up and laugh at just about everything. We could look at something and say something about it and just start cracking up.
Look at this lazy slob.
Fuck you.
Look at me.
Now a packed sports hall with a flickering scoreboard on the wall.
He was huge at the school. You know, everybody knew Nathan. Sports, he on top. He was well liked by everybody in the school, everybody. He had all the girls, that's for sure. But he was just always a guy that included everybody. Even if they were, you know, I guess the nerd of the school, he would still treat everybody the same. That's what probably just made him so awesome.
A hoop is scored in a basketball match where a player has Chiefs written on his vest.
It has been very difficult. Very, very difficult. It's been hard. It's what was kind of going through this kid's mind to do that, to do something like this crazy. You know, there was no signs of anything when I was with him. Like, there was nothing like unordinary with him.
A figure in silhouette, standing alone in a corridor.
You just never, ever, in a million years, saw it coming.
Now Beth and John are driving.
The worst part is to find out that, you know, he emptied the gun. Boom, 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 boom. All I remember is seeing somebody there. And no offense, it definitely wasn't my son. That's not who I saw. But yeah, when you come to it and they tell you that, it just... I figured I was dreaming. I figured I was having a nightmare. Because that wasn't him.
Traveling along a road that has tire tracks cut into the snow.
I think the fact that Nathan was the one that shot us, I don't know that I'll ever be able to process that. I was shot and John was shot, but I had no idea who it was. All I remember is seeing somebody in a black, like a down coat that's stitched. And I remember trying to do that to look into the light.
She holds her hand up in front of her face.
I thought I saw a person other than my son. I thought I saw a guy, kind of middle height, kind of heavier set, kind of a little puffier.
He saw the same thing. Somebody in one of those black puffy coats.
A dark gray river, then freezing fog hugging a hillside.
We had been trying to live with it for weeks, and now here it is, it's fresh with her. She was going through everything that we had already gone through.
A gentle flurry of snow falling in a forest.
Everybody says, oh, you guys just made that person up who was in your room. You knew it was your son. I couldn't believe it. I honestly thought I was dreaming and they were lying to me.
Beth, sitting with her eyes closed.
I'm extremely good at bottling up emotions. It's one of the crutches that I used a lot during this process. I still use it today. There's emotions, there's heartache, there's sorrow, there's more emotional pain than I can begin to explain. And I don't know whether I'm man enough to process it. So the best way I can do with it is bottle it up, put it away. Deal with it later. I don't have time to deal with it now. I don't want to deal with it now. If I did deal with it now, it could have repercussions, and I don't want to take those on yet. Maybe someday, but not now.
A view from the car as it drives through the frozen white landscape, then other traffic coming and going on the road.
You don't have a boy that likes to play basketball. This kid with a good heart wanted to help whoever was in that room that night and pulled the trigger. Was someone else other than Nathan.
With tears in her eyes, Beth sits looking thoughtful.
I walked in into the bedroom, and I stood at the foot of their bed, and I remember I raised the gun, and I aimed it at my mother first. I don't know why. And then I remember like having like these really quick thoughts of, you don't have to do it. But they were like so quick and suddenly gone that I didn't really have a chance to really think about it. And before I'd realized that I'd done it, I'd pulled the trigger and the gun had gone off. I fired again, and then I fired again 3 times at my mom. And then I swung over to my dad. I fired again, I fired at him. 3 times. I ran down the hallway. I sat down on the stairs, and that's when it like really clicked what I'd done. And I just remember feeling so much guilt and remorse and hearing my mom trying to talk. She was trying to yell for help. It just wasn't human.
A car driving along a mountainside.
I don't remember ever thinking death or murder or anything like that. I just remember thinking gone, just them being away.
Nathan is a young man in the present, gazing out of a window.
No one deserves to ever go through what my family went through. I think my parents probably have a lot of questions. They didn't do anything wrong, and they didn't see anything wrong, so then you get back to the original question of why. I remember spending a lot of time thinking about it. The number one thing was always why. Why would someone that was raised in a good family and very happy and go-lucky. Happy and go-lucky and athletic and always doing all these activities, all of a sudden blow up. To sit there and think and not know why was terrible and be stuck and knowing that you caused so much pain and emotional pain and suffering and it's just not having the answer was very, very, very difficult. I felt really guilty about it because how could I do such a thing and not even know why? Immediately the human brain goes to worst case scenarios. My number one fear and the one thing that I remember thinking about and kind of honestly being in denial about is thinking maybe I was insane. I remember looking up stuff and they said, you know, most people that are clinically insane don't know they're insane. I just don't know. I just remember being mad and frustrated.
Nathan as a teenager, spinning a basketball on his fingers in a home movie. A car drives past a sign on the edge of a town that says, hitchhiking permitted. The police department at twilight, then Nathan being interviewed inside.
What was it you said you got in trouble for? I'm sorry you told me that.
I was late to class.
And so you got detention, that would have been Thursday? Tell me what happened when you got home.
My mom picked me up because she got off work early. She said, get a snack, you have chores to do. So sweep all the tile in the entire house and then mop it for me. I said, okay. So I swept and mopped the whole house. And she goes, okay, now vacuum all the carpets. And I said, okay, I'll vacuum the carpets. She goes, go in the backyard and scoop the dog poop and fill in the holes. But I've been grounded from my phone and the Xbox and TV. Electronics, pretty much.
Since how long?
Yesterday.
Okay. All right.
A slate gray river snaking through a snowy forest in the sunshine. Then Caden looking out of the diner window.
He would tell me multiple times, actually, that his parents were a little strict on him. If he didn't do the most simplest things, he would be grounded for a long, long, long time.
Got back from school and my dad had me doing chores. I'd already been grounded, so there was another, my grounding had been extended. So I go up and I get ready for bed, my dad comes in. My mom doesn't come in, which is weird, because normally she comes in too. I said, where's mom? And he said, she's downstairs, she's kind of frustrated right now. And then on his way out, I remember him saying, get some sleep, because you got a lot of work to do, but you're not going to be playing in the game. And it was like, he said, you got a lot of work to do. And then there was like a pause and he says, and you're not playing in the game. So I was like, what? I'm like, the tournament? And he said, yeah. And it's like, that was kind of like the click. I mean, that was like 2 or 3 hours before.
Nathan's blue eye and eyelashes up close. Caden again.
What probably went on in his mind that night was, you know, what do I really have to lose? I'm sitting here and I don't have any social life. And he convinced himself that, you know, if he got rid of his parents, that he would be able to just go and do things that were, you know, that the other kids would be able to do. But of course, you know, that's not the right thing to do, you know, ever.
A pickup truck driving along a road during a pale, peachy sunset. Prosecuting attorney Angus Lee.
Based on all the evidence we had, it was pretty clear that this was a very strong case against Nathan for 2 counts of attempted murder in the first degree. What was slightly less obvious was whether or not he needed to be prosecuted as an adult. The public safety component weighed very heavily on me. If he was prosecuted as a juvenile, that would have guaranteed that at the age 21, he would be released from all supervision and incarceration and be free to go anywhere and do anything.
Brett Hill, Nathan's defense attorney.
When I first met Nathan, I was very impressed with him. He was articulate and bright. I believe Nathan is a good person. I think he has a good set of values and knows right from wrong.
He had time to think about what was right and what was wrong and what he should do and what he shouldn't do. And he went to their room and he stood over them. And he spent time to contemplate his actions. And then he determined who he would shoot first.
You know, ultimately, with Nathan Brooks, there wasn't much question that what was alleged to have happened, happened. The question was, what do we do with him now?
Can the community be safe if we let him out at 21 or before? That's the big question.
Is it right to give up on an individual? Throw someone away?
He was looking at a minimum of 40 years in prison, up to about 50 years.
When the prosecutors were talking 50 years for Nathan Brooks, essentially what they were saying is that it is a life to throw away. I don't agree with that, not in Nathan Brooks' case.
The court decided Nathan should stand trial as an adult for two counts of attempted murder. He faced up to 50 years in prison. Nathan was released on bail into his grandparents' care while he awaited trial.
This is Nathan's room. This is where he slept and studied the 13 months that he was here with us. It's not much, but I think he liked it, was happy. Getting him out on bail was important. It was a sad time, but it was a special time.
You know, I talked to Nathan before, and he says, you know, he says, these people are afraid of me. I'm not going to hurt anybody. He says, I just can't believe it. He says, I'm not going to do anything, any harm to anybody.
Was it an act of mercy? It ended up being that way.
He asked me if I was afraid of him. And I told him that I was uncertain of him. And he told me, he says, Granny, if you're afraid of me, I won't go. And that was good enough, because I know that he wanted to get out, but he wouldn't do it if I was afraid of him. So that made my decision. There was a few reservations, I think, at first. When he came home, of course, we had to get all the guns out of the house. So we were talking about that. And I said it was really kind of inconsequential because, you know, there was a whole rack full of knives. But that if he ever cut my throat, I'd haunt him. So yeah, that kind of broke the ice.
Hearts and rosary beads hanging from the Brooks' rearview mirror.
My wife and I were stuck in a very odd position. The prosecutor's office wouldn't talk to us because we were the parents of the accused. The defense attorneys wouldn't really talk to us because we're the victims. So we didn't really know what was going on with the case. But we felt Nathan did need to be punished for what he had done. Part of what we come to the realization is we couldn't provide the treatment that Nathan needed. The court could provide that. To go up there and say, yes, my son needs to be put in jail for what he did. That was difficult to come to. It took lots of conversations, lots of heartache.
A river with snowy banks.
Prosecution wanted us to go all out, and we said no, because he's our son. So we were just kind of left out, because we were parents and we still loved him, and we didn't want to help with his sentencing.
To try to convince someone that 10 years was an appropriate length of time, it was like you're bargaining with somebody's life. And because at the end of the day, that's what we were doing. that process, I was angry about that. I wasn't good enough at it, I guess.
Nathan avoided trial by pleading guilty to a lesser charge of assault with a deadly weapon. In 2015, he was sentenced to 15 and a half years in prison. Nathan looking at cars in a prison workshop.
This case is not a whodunit. It's a why done it. Why did he do it? When you prosecute people who are in a gang and they commit a gang murder, you know why they did it. They did it because it was part of the rules of the gang. There's a motive.
Why would someone go and try to shoot their parents? I know at least when I was involved with him, it was a big question in his mind is, man, why? How did that happen? That doesn't seem like me.
Did you ask him why?
We did, yeah. And he didn't have an answer.
If there is no answer to the question why, if there is no reason why he did what he did, that's maybe the most troubling outcome that there could possibly be.
Nathan's therapist, Shanna Schultz.
Nathan was kind of a high-profile case, though, so we all kind of had heard about it before, you know, just on the news and stuff. Nathan is very much an introvert. He keeps everything inside. And I'm sure he probably grew up that way because that's generally how they are. He does keep a lot inside, and he, you know, just watching him and talking to him, he doesn't even have a lot of facial expression when he talks. But it's all in there. And when you get to know him more, you can notice little smiles, little smirks, or even though he appears like he might be unemotional, he is probably one of the more emotional kids I get to deal with. We've been able to watch him for a few years. We haven't seen any personality disorders. There's been no antisocial traits with him. I don't see any piece of him that would give anybody the cause to believe that he was psychotic. We haven't seen anything that would lead anybody to believe that he's not of normal average intelligence with normal average abilities for things. He's a very smart, very kind person. He loves his family. He's very close to them. It's obvious when you see them together that they are very, very bonded.
We want to know, you know, as a community, we want to know why did this happen, and we want to be able to blame it on, yeah, socioeconomic background, abuse at home, was Nathan being abused? Just doesn't appear any of that was there.
A group of inmates walking with an escort in the prison grounds.
Nathan's diagnosis when he first arrived, it was oppositional defiant disorder, ADHD, and possible bipolar. The psychiatrist, he never takes what he's given as the final word. He wants to do his own diagnosis. And so he worked with Nathan on coming off his medications to see really what symptoms he had. After he was taken off his ADHD medication, he was doing great in school. He was getting good grades, he was focusing, he was doing what he needed to. He was following the rules, he was being appropriate. So we determined he didn't need that ADHD medication. But he had pretty severe depression. I mean, he was a pretty severely depressed guy. So he ended up with the diagnosis of major depressive disorder. This time now, it is in remission. He's feeling good, he's stable. There's been quite a few different medication changes to figure out what works with him.
I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder. It's just, it's a relief to know that something else wasn't seriously wrong and that I could get help. I mean, I'm not crazy or an animal or anything like that.
A lot of times in younger people, the depression comes out as irritability or anger. You feel worthless, hopeless, extremely down, extremely depressed. This goes on for a few week period of time.
Some of the things that Nathan indicated were harsh punishments in other households or chores. In many homes, that's part of the duties of home. But in Nathan's mind, it was harsh punishment. And what was in his mind was the key.
The diagnosis has brought a lot of things to light. I mean, it helps me to really understand why I did what I did. There was aggression and depression, and there just wasn't any way for me to deal with it. I didn't understand, and I didn't know why, and I was lost.
The Brooks' car parked in a lay-by flanked by snow.
Oh, I look back daily on whether or not I was too tough on him, and no, I don't think I was. Honest, he was my child, and he was loved dearly. That never changed. I had no idea of what he was going through, or he thought differently of it. Honest to goodness, I had no idea. And I don't know that Nathan did.
She and her husband walked towards the prison.
I understand the medical side. But the fact that at the end of the day, he still chose to do what he did. That I struggle with. I'm still confused by that. I don't understand how someone would do that.
The couple set out chairs in a visiting room.
I don't know. I don't think that's something I'll ever truly, fully understand. It's just, maybe it's beyond my ability to get.
They look out of the window. A handcuffed Nathan is walking with two escorts between the buildings.
I just think it's really great that he still has them in his life and they are welcome him back and with open arms, and they have been able to work on that relationship.
A central seating area with mostly closed doors on either side. As John Brooks sits waiting, Nathan enters behind him.
Look at that. Is it going for the Santa Claus?
There you go. Hey, buddy. How are you doing?
Good. Yeah. Good.
Nathan hugs his parents.
Oh, God, I miss you.
They sit down together.
So, when does the beard shaving month end?
Yeah, it was supposed to be tomorrow.
Supposed to be? That sounds like...
I'm deciding on whether or not I still want to do it.
That is mighty scruffy.
It's a lot of work to shave all that off, I'm telling you.
So how are your teeth? How's the pulled one? Pulled area?
Were they pulled the molar? Or the wisdom teeth?
They pulled both of them.
They did both? Dude.
Did it hurt on both
sides? I got
sides?
Holes on both sides. I think they're both gone. I don't remember.
Oh.
Whatever they gave me was like for a gorilla.
So let me see.
She peers into his mouth.
Wow.
Does it look like it's missing?
Yeah. I'll be darned. Looks good.
You're brushing?
No.
No. I need to brush more. Now you saw that? I don't know what it is.
What happened?
I don't know. It just showed up.
Oh, but you didn't get hurt or anything?
No.
Okay.
No, it just showed up.
I remember the very first meeting, and that's when I repetitively told them that it wasn't their fault, because I was really worried that my parents took too much blame for what happened. And they blamed themselves, and they said several times that they should have noticed and they should have known that I had a mental illness. And I just remember telling them, I didn't know, so how could they? The fact is, it is my brain. Only I'll know before everyone else will. My biggest fear was that they blamed themselves way too much. They made it way too hard on each other. And I personally feel like that had, some effect on the marriage. I mean, that was really the hardest part, was to prevent that from tearing the family apart, and to work towards keeping it together long enough to where I could receive treatment and become a family again.
Alrighty.
They stand up. Nathan's taller than his mom.
Hey, where'd she go?
It's gonna be a really long healing process. I don't know how someone would ever heal from that. I know that it helps that his parents love him unconditionally.
Love you, Dad.
Oh, love you, buddy.
But I still also don't think that him and the family have openly talked about it a lot either. It's kind of like to the side right now, and maybe at some point when people are stronger, with their emotions are stronger, they'll be able to talk about it more.
Nathan hugging his parents again.
I really can't explain it. I can't explain how you can love your daughter so much and yet love the person that shot her so much. I can't explain it, except how can you not love your grandson? You know, you just do. He was always a good kid, and you cannot just turn the love off for the boy that you've always known. It just doesn't work that way. There's no manual for handling what's happened to us. You just feel. That's all you do.
It could be so much worse. You could look at it as some parents have lost their children. So we are blessed as parents we still have our children.
I'm glad that we didn't die just for Nathan, so that Nathan never has to carry that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Nathan is due for release in 2028. He will be 29 years old.